This edition of the Packet Pushers podcast is brought to you by Infinetta Systems, a leading innovator and provider of hyperscale WAN optimization solutions. Infinetta's WAN optimization product, the Data Mobility Switch, allows enterprises to expand and fill large WAN links. Companies benefit from increased WAN utilization, improved application performance, and cost savings from fewer bandwidth upgrades. Infinetta helps you move more data more quickly using less bandwidth. Get more information at www.infinetta.com.
Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking industry podcast, where folks who build networks for a living gather in the virtual conference room to exchange opinions, talk technology, and chat with excellent industry guests. If you've never heard the show before, we talk about topics such as routing, switching, Ethernet fabrics, firewalls, data center design, and even voice over IP might sneak in there once in a while. Vendors we've had on the show include Cisco, Juniper, Arista, F5, HP, Infinetta, and others. If your job title is something like network engineer or network architect, if you know the difference between a frame and a packet, or if multi-chassis link aggregation makes you smile, you've come home. Welcome. Today on the show, we've lined up Greg Farrow, Ivan Pepelniak, and Derek Winkworth to chat a bit more about OpenFlow. OpenFlow's got a bunch of press over the last couple of weeks, and we wanted to jaw about it some more. So guys, let's introduce ourselves and get the conversation going on this day, Sunday, November 6th, 2011. I am Ethan Banks, network engineer, CCIE, and blogger up at packetpushers.net. You can follow me on Twitter at ecbanks and share with me on Google+ via Ethan Banks. I am back home after a couple of weeks of traveling, and I am glad to be settled back in New Hampshire for probably the rest of 2011. And that's a good thing. I am tired of hotel rooms and airplanes, even though I don't do it that much. The last 2 weeks, I've had plenty of it. And that chuckle you just heard, right, was from Mr. Greg Farrow. And I don't even think you've recovered from your jet lag yet, have you?
No, I'm still struggling to pace myself back into the UK time zone, which is 8 hours different after our recent trip to San Francisco, where we hung out. No, San Jose, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Where we hung out for the Network Field Day, and before that, the OpenFlow Symposium, which seems to have gone off all right, or at least everybody's saying very nice things about it. Thank you very much. Money's in the way. And yes, I've been designing data center again. I've been stuck in a Cisco lab testing various configurations and ideas, usually without much luck yet, but I'm getting there. And I'm looking forward to chatting today to the team.
Of course, Ivan Pepelniak is joining us from Slovenia. And Mr. Pepelniak, how does the day find you?
Pretty good, thank you. The last 2 days were really interesting because I was finishing the Data Center Fabrics webinar and doing double quotes fact checking with five different vendors, and everyone was trying to persuade me how I under-evaluated his fabric offering. So those were interesting conversations.
No, they didn't, did they?
No. Well, as someone said, well, you know, this is the first time someone is doing something like that, and we have to put our best foot forward.
You know, the surprising thing is you say that about them, but I must say that most of them, there was a lot of talk at Network Field Day about the problem. And I felt that actually all of them actually understood the problem. Even though they've all got different answers, we still all have a good view of the problem, which is pleasing.
Yeah, and that's really nice to see because, you know, we were not discussing major things like does this make sense or not. We're discussing small items like, well, on this switch, we actually do a bit more than what you say we are doing. So can we fix that particular item in that particular scorecard?
One more person that we've got on the show with us today is first time on the podcast, but if you follow the packetpushers.net blogging, you're already going to be aware of Derek Winkworth. Derek, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners and tell folks how they can follow you on the internet and what you do for a living.
I work for a very large financial service provider here in the U.S. I'm a route switch MPLS engineer, CCIE, JNCIE, and if you want, you can follow me on Twitter at Cloud Toad, all one word, just as it sounds, and of course on Packet Pushers.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for joining us. And you know, one of the reasons that we wanted Derek to join us is he's been very vocal about OpenFlow, thinking about the promise of it, what it could deliver, and he's had some introduction to it close up and with some of the big vendors that are out there, including Big Switch, right? Didn't Big Switch have you over to give you a demo of what's going on with their OpenFlow?
Yep, they had back in September, I went and visited Rob Sherwood and some of the other folks at Big Switch in a conference room right in their I guess their second office. I think they moved again since I was there.
Yeah, and then you wrote a blog post about what you've seen that was pretty, you were pretty smitten with the idea. Maybe it'd be kind of cool if you could just kind of summarize when you were on that demo what it was about the whole OpenFlow idea and maybe a little bit about what Big Switch was doing that really got your attention.
You know, you're talking about the problem. Everyone has a different view or angle on the problem. And in the financial service industry, you know, network separation and security is extremely important. And part of the problem is that network virtualization in the actual infrastructure is poorly supported with respect to virtual servers and mapping them to existing virtual networking technologies. So, you know, one of, that's been a huge focus, you know, for me in my current job is trying to find, you know, how can we leverage virtual servers but keep doing it securely? Like, how can we map these VMs, you know, to some partition of the network that's has acceptable separation? And specifically in our case, MPLS, you know, that it's a huge gap. It's a huge problem. And our rollout of virtual servers in this kind of environment has been hampered by it. So when I was sitting in Big Switch's conference room and they were kind of explaining, you know, what they were doing, it popped into my head that they had kind of merged the two things that we're really trying to do. We want secure multi-tenant with proper separation, but for each tenant, we want virtual topology, being able to define flows relative to the VMs that are mapped to that tenant, regardless of where the VMs are. Also being able to do waypoint routing through appliances like load balancers and firewalls and so on. And they spoke directly to both virtual topology and to secure multi-tenant networking. Being able to manage that visually, which just absolutely melted my mind when I was in there. You know, that's really why I got excited about it. That's why I like the NEC demo, actually.
I'm also in a similar situation to Derek, where I'm designing a data center that has multiple virtual containers, not to the same sort of scale that he's got. I'm more focused on financial compliance, which is a little bit simpler than what he's doing. But that separating the network while having single points of connectivity is a real, there's a real fight between the freedom that a network gives, which is any-to-any connectivity, against what security wants, which is defined connectivity from point A to point B, and to be mandated at some level by a policy or a strategy statement or something like that. And that, as a designer, which is my current engagement, is as an architect slash network designer, it's incredibly difficult to balance the requirements on the left-hand side for an infrastructure that can scale up to 10 gig or, you know, multi 10 gigs. At the same time, I've got to put firewalls in to enforce front-back separation at the same time as I have to deploy left-right separation, which is vertical separation channels. And it's a huge problem to find technologies that work, are secure, and aren't expensive, because for every separation you create an audit point and an enforcement point that has two operational costs. One is security has to be able to validate and audit data that crosses between two security zones, and that's an ongoing cost. So the more complex the security, the more cost you incur. And secondly, your operational cost goes higher because either separating them creates its own configuration or architectural limitations, and therefore your staff need to be able to configure it. So there's more talent required, more training, more education, more documentation. And the second part is that it's very easy to make a mistake and cause an operational failure. So the misconfiguration of an MPLS command or a BGP statement is incorrectly configured can see an entire MPLS network come to a failure point. You know, as we talk about OpenFlow separation or virtual separation of the data center, or even better control or better visibility of the data center, is what excites me about OpenFlow. Just similar to what Derek was saying, except my problems aren't as big as his.
Yeah, no, one other thing. I was sitting in the demo during Network Field Day with when NEC did the demonstration of their programmable flow technology. It's a shipping product, which makes it somewhat distinct from most of the other buzzword kind of things that are going on with OpenFlow. This is a product that you can buy today from NEC. What they demonstrated for us was a controller that would issue OpenFlow directives to OpenFlow capable switches. And then they did a very simple demo where using scripts, they plumbed up a couple of endpoints that they were able to ping each other, both at layer 2 and at layer 3. That was that Am I right in saying that that's about the majority of what they covered? Or was there some other major feature there too, maybe?
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
No, they also did interception. So the ability to steer a traffic flow to a load balancer
or
to an
they
IDS.
They can do that, yes.
When I saw that demo, and you're going, well, that's simple. You can plug in any network and build a couple of VLANs or some SVIs and we're done. You can do all that same kind of stuff. So what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is the granularity of control and the way that you could do it, the being able to move traffic from one specific port to another specific port and then flush that out across as many different ports as you needed to and then scale it out to a whole bunch of different switches using that methodology with no reliance on a spanning tree, no reliance on any of the traditional networking protocols necessarily. Not that those wouldn't factor into the picture at some point, but it's the kind of a thing where you look at it as an engineer and go, if I could have built a network and built how a network would work way back in the beginning of time and made it the way I wanted it to be, to work the way my brain works, that was it. That I was looking at it and went, that's it. That's what I want. Now, I don't know that I want that in my data center today going forward because you really need an application integrated with that OpenFlow controller that is going to give you that power and be able to react properly to flows that go across the network. But just seeing that raw demo with those scripts and connecting these endpoints together using none of the normal ways that we as network engineers think about plumbing the network up was really awesome, really incredible. I was really, really very taken by it. Now, Derek, you said you saw that NEC demo as well?
I did see it, yeah. Yeah, and I agree a little bit. It needs an application, and the tools they were showing us were, they were neat, but I don't know if you could really manage a complex environment, using just those tools. I think you're right. I think there'd have to be some applications you can sort of layer on that.
Well, but look at it from a different perspective. Even with just the CLI. So if we forget the graphical tools, it gives you a totally different perspective. You're no longer managing individual devices. You're managing ports that are connected together and they look like a single switch. And that's, from my perspective, the biggest shift that both NEC and Big Switch are doing.
You end up with a holistic view of the network managed from one application that can see all the devices and all the ports and treat them as one unified device, because of that separation of the control plane from the physical switches. So now everybody's, maybe orchestrate is too strong of a word, but not totally inappropriate to have all those switches working together under one management umbrella.
Well, the way I see it is, instead of focusing on devices, you focus on what you want the connectivity to be.
And from a security point of view, you also focus on endpoints. So you say server A needs to talk to server B, and you can actually map a path from server A to server B because the controller has a view of all points in the path. So we move away from each server is an IP address and lives alone, has no relationship to the things around it, which is how we kind of currently see it. We put a server in, we give it an IP address, and that's it. Close the door on it, we're done. Whereas OpenFlow more accurately reflects the TCP functions of the network, where a stream has a start point and an end point, and it flows. Packets flow in a continuous application exchange between two endpoints, and OpenFlow allows us to visualize the system in that way.
Okay, Greg, don't go there.
You think?
If you remember what they were saying, they could instantiate between 600 and 1,000 flows per switch per second.
Yeah, Ivan, I'll be the guy that says, well, 600 to 1,000 flows per second, if you're listening to this, just to get some context, we're talking about a specific issue here where if an open flow switch, he's loaded up with flow tables, meaning he sees a frame or a packet come in and he examines characteristics of that chunk of network data coming through that datagram, and then he looks in his flow table. Do I have a match for this or not so that I know how to forward this thing? If he doesn't have a match, he punts it to the CPU in his switch, which sends it up to the controller. The controller examines it and says, okay, your flow entry for this is going to be whatever it is, forwarded out, port X, drop it, whatever the action might be that's supposed to be taken on that. You can only do that specific action 600 to 1,000 times a second. And as I've been saying, yeah, so you would potentially, depending on how you've constructed your flow tables or what the application is you're expecting OpenFlow to be able to manage for you, there is a potential scalability problem. That's where you're headed with this, right, Ivan?
Absolutely.
The number is actually less than that, because you have to remember it's not talking to the controller only to instantiate new flows. It's also talking to the controller for every, you know, for a whole host of other things. For instance, the local line loop protocols like LLDP, CDP, things of that nature, LACP, are not being run if it's a pure dumb OpenFlow switch, which are shipping right now, switches that don't support those functions locally on, you know, on the node. All of those things got to go to the controller as well, ARP, all that other stuff.
Derek, those are toys.
You mean the shipping switches that are out there today, Ivan?
No, a dump switch that can do no line card function locally, like LACP or BFD or something like that, is not, I wouldn't consider it to be a serious piece of gear for my data center. If you want to detect failures like in milliseconds, you can't rely on a central controller to pull the port status through the TCP session constantly.
No, because of course there's many milliseconds of worth of latency that are going to come in just to process a flow that the switch has not seen before. And right, you would be adding significant latency for the message to get sent up to the controller, back down to the switch with a response, making it not reacting quickly enough to certain situations, which we've become accustomed to in our networking protocols today.
Exactly. So today we have something like BFD, which can really react very, very quickly if you want it to react quickly. With OpenFlow, with dump switches, that would have to go through the controller. If you remember during the technical part of OpenFlow Symposium, everyone more or less agreed that we will have to implement some line card functions locally on the switches. And that will be one of the vendor differentiators.
Well, let me throw another question out here. Now, the NEC programmable flow demo, you know, grabbed our attention. We, you know, that was like the first tangible, wow, okay, I'm starting to grasp this here, just how OpenFlow can manipulate traffic and the power that it gives me. But as I've done, you know, some other reading on this, there's the question that's come up, well, who really came up with OpenFlow? Because it's not like there were problems that we, you know, didn't know how to solve, and oh my goodness, OpenFlow is the answer. It's the answer to who came up with OpenFlow and why is a little more complicated than that. If you look at the OpenFlow Networking Foundation and the folks that are tied up in that, it seems like there's a lot of large cloud providers that are involved here who are driving OpenFlow because it's going to take them down the road of commoditized switches, meaning I don't have to buy an expensive switch from Juniper or Cisco or fill in the blank with your favorite switching vendor. I can buy a cheap commoditized switch and just put an OpenFlow controller on top of it to make it do what I want to do, and my per port costs I'm going to be driving way down with this strategy. So the reason I thought of that and bring it up, Ivan, is you were just saying, well, you know, a dumb switch is really not going to be an effective solution. So how do you think starting to bake in some of these other features are going to work out in the form of a commoditized cheap switch, which does seem to be part of the driver here that the guys driving OpenFlow want to see happen?
Well, you see, you just discovered the problem. Some of the functions will have to remain in the switch. And I don't think we know today what those functions actually have to be, because no one has deployed OpenFlow on a large enough scale.
Even NEC, talking about scalability, made the point
Ethan, go on.
Well, I was just thinking back to the programmable flow demo, and NEC said, yeah, practically speaking, as far as scale, you can't scale this up any bigger than, say, 50 switches managed by a controller. And since there is no such thing in the OpenFlow world today as a tiered hierarchy of controllers, they described a scenario where you'd have OpenFlow switch domains of about 50 switches apiece, mated up to a controller, and then to connect in between each of the OpenFlow domains that you might create with about 50 switches apiece in it, you'd have some kind of a traditional data center core running BGP or OSPF, something like that, which is their way of saying, this is how we think you can scale it up today.
Yes, and probably tomorrow as well.
The ability to be able to update OpenFlow entries on a per second basis or a per minute basis is something of a furphy, because most of the entries in your switch you don't care about. Really, you're only looking to manage certain flows and to instantiate static flows infrequently, right? So what you want to be able to say is, at this time of day, I want the flow pattern to match this. Or for this flow, there's an open-ended access, an open flow which has a series of wildcards in the entry, which allows for any MAC address, any source to this destination, apply this QoS policy and send it out this port, not instead of the other port. And when I say the other port, I mean there will be another OpenFlow entry that's, if you haven't matched the previous entry to that IP address, you would now match this entry, which sends it to an alternate path. And I think the actual number of entries you can put into a switch is important in certain types of use cases where you want to very closely manage the traffic. But in the same way that we don't closely manage our traffic today, that is, we don't treat every flow as an individual flow and monitor every flow as an individual flow, even NetFlow, we can't comprehend the purpose of every single flow. What we do is we create a set of policies which say we explicitly select this flow and we munge it this way. So we QoS it, or we policy-based route it, or we drop it into a VERF and pop an MPLS tag on, drop it into this VERF. Those are the sorts of things that we do, and they're largely static. To me, that's the early use case, and we get a much more granular control on the at the edge, at the access layer. And in the core, we would have different rules, which would, again, this cascading flow concept where we'd put in these very specific rules, and if they're not working, then the de facto ones come down. And there'd be a way, and it's not currently in OpenFlow today, but, you know, OpenFlows are still, what, 3 years away for most of us? There would be a way for rules to be rescinded. So it would go, hang on, this is a trigger condition for this rule to die and to be removed from the OpenFlow table. And that's probably the thing that's missing today in OpenFlow 1.1 standard.
Well, Derek, okay. let me route this back around to you for a second, because there seems to be a couple of different conversations that are going on here around the use cases for OpenFlow. Now, in fairness to Big Switch, they would say, hey, we're not purely an OpenFlow company, right? I think they would say there's doing some other things there too. Yes, they're big into OpenFlow, and that's a big part of what they do, but there's other things going on there as well. Nasira would flat out has stated, we're not an OpenFlow company. Yes, OpenFlow will be a little part of it, but there's a much bigger picture here. And in fact, those guys have gone so far as to say, if you think it's all about OpenFlow, then you're really missing the point. But Derek, what I've been reading about in your blog post, you've been stating making the virtualization case and the separation and security case, which seems very different from steering traffic around at the edge, or is it? What's your reaction to that?
Well, I still have the same requirement to steer traffic around at the edge, right? And you know, there's other ways. I was just thinking to myself when you were saying, well, it has to do 600,000 flows or whatever, if that's the limitation. Igor from Yahoo, he made a sort of a case where you could potentially pre-build, if you have an OpenFlow domain and you know what MAC addresses are attached to all the ports, you could pre-build the tables. And you don't have to learn then. There's no learning taking place on the controller or anywhere. All the flows are pre-programmed. That's actually feasible if you have a smaller number of switches and you know what all the MAC addresses are, you could feasibly pre-program all the potential flows.
I think the argument comes in just because of the fussiness of trying to deal with MAC addresses and hardware replacements, and how do you cope with all that. But you know, from a standpoint of an environment that doesn't change a whole lot, yeah, I can see how you could get there.
Yeah, and anyway, VM addresses are fixed anyway. VM addresses are fixed in the config file.
And what you mean by that is that if you move the VM to another host, it'll be the same MAC address.
Exactly, and you know in advance what it will be. It never changes.
Right, and if you know what VM if you know what host it's going to, then you know what ports it's going to, and you can pre-program the flows.
Yes,
but you know, think about that. Think about the scale of that, though. It's interesting because he made the argument that you know, with traditional protocols, your network is never stable. It never converges. It just is constantly churning, and we only have the illusion of being stable, right? At certain timescales. Well, If you move that VM, if everything's pre-programmed and you move that VM, don't you have to reprogram the flows in every switch?
Yes, that's the problem.
And I was trying to get, and I was trying to allude to that a little bit in my blog post. You know, there's, on the one hand, people are saying, "Oh, well, this is going to be simpler because you don't have to think about it, right?" And I tried to turn around and say, "No, you're kind of moving the complexity around, and you're doing, and you, there are implications to what you're doing." You know, there's,
you're pushing a great deal of responsibility to the OpenFlow application that is telling the controller how to program the switches. You're making the assumption, let's say, if I move a VM from this side of the data center to the other, that the application is going to be smart about that and then drive the reprogramming of the OpenFlow switches underneath for the to update the flow tables appropriately.
Think about the APIs you're going to have to hook into that controller, and you know, making sure that all of that works. You know, because that's a lot of moving parts. And you do an upgrade or do you a patch, and something breaks, and that's going to be interesting to troubleshoot.
And that really comes down to another one of the arguments you've had or concerns that you've raised about OpenFlow is, hey, where are the robust troubleshooting tools?
That's huge.
By the way, it's even worse than we all think it is, because every vendor, including NEC and Big Switch, has realized there is a scaling issue. And so they are reusing existing layer 2 headers to solve the scaling issue. They're rewriting MAC addresses, they're using fields in a different manner, whatever they're doing. And everyone is saying, this is our secret sauce, this is what is differentiating us from the others, we cannot talk about that. Now, if you put a Wireshark or a sniffer between two OpenFlow switches, what will you see? Because the fields in the header are not used in a standard way. The MAC address is no longer a MAC address. So how will you troubleshoot that?
I agree with that statement, and I would like to, and this is sort of orthogonal to troubleshooting, but I think that phenomenon where people are saying, "Oh, don't worry about what's happening; it'll just work. You know, it's our secret sauce," is a little bit of, you know, don't look behind at the man behind the curtain thing going on. I don't know if they want people to know what they're doing, because they're, as Ivan and I've discovered, if you think about it, some of them have solutioned the core and aggregate tier issue inside of an OpenFlow network in a way that behaves very similar to MPLS, but they're not using MPLS tags. They're, as Ivan indicated, they're reusing existing fields in non-standard ways to get that behavior.
That just sunk in with me, that they're reusing standard fields in a non-standard way, and now I got scared. Now I'm nervous.
Thank you.
Well, I think this might have come up in the programmable flow demo with NEC, and I think it just might have washed over me because I was getting a little bit of information overload at that point. But it's reminiscent to a degree of what some of the fabric solutions do, where there's something magical that they're doing between the edge and pushing it into the interconnects so that there's only one lookup that's going on. But they're not going to tell you exactly what that is. It's magic, and don't worry about it. It just works. And how much do we trust a vendor to do something magical that just works, and we trust them, versus being able to look at Wireshark and be able to diagnose and troubleshoot things ourselves? You know, certainly that's been one of my go-to tools over time, particularly with load balancers, trying to figure out why a particular load balancing application isn't working quite right. Who just sent me a TCP reset? That shouldn't have happened, and I've got a firewall, a router, a NAT device, a load balancer, and an IPS, whatever, all in the middle, and then trying to figure out who sent the reset to figure out what's going on. Now throw OpenFlow in the mix, who's doing funny business with the frame or with the packet. Now I'm nervous.
They're all unbelievers. Heretics.
We've lived too long, Greg. We've lived too long. That's it. We are too old.
Sorry, Derek.
Well, come on, Greg. You've been one of the big OpenFlow flag wavers here. You know, to a point of me going, okay, Greg is really into this. He really believes this. He really sees this as the future, and this is where things are going. And, you know, you're not, I haven't heard a whole lot of skepticism out of you about OpenFlow, but you're too much of a curmudgeon not to have some skepticalness about you in this topic. So, come on, what's your reaction to all of this?
Okay, so any protocol's got challenges. So I look back at BGP in 1996, 97, when it was basically
worked. Thank you.
It worked, kind of, but it had no troubleshooting, it had no feedback loops, it had no root reflectors, it had no confederations, it had no diagnostic capabilities, it didn't send error messages backwards and forwards, it didn't use loopback interfaces.
Oh, it did.
No, it didn't. Not back then. You had to use the external interface that faced it towards the service provider because it couldn't support loopbacks in Cisco iOS. I mean, everybody conveniently forgets that 15 years ago, BGP was a bucket of pus. And it barely worked, and anybody who could make it work, there was an arcane set of about 20 people worldwide, it felt like, who actually knew what was happening. And then 15 years later, we've strapped on all these useful handles and levers and buttons and knobs that actually make BGP work. But it took 15 years to get there, right? We're looking at a protocol which is nascent or embryonic or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I'm not for a minute suggesting that you want to get out there today and start deploying this into your network. What I am saying is, as somebody who tracks network strategy and business futures and considers things like which vendor you should be partnering with going forward, OpenFlow has the potential to create significant disruption in the networking industry. I don't think that it's going to do like the iPhone did for mobile phone handsets, which has turned the industry on its head, and companies like Nokia and RIM are suddenly, who previously owned the entire smartphone business, have suddenly been stood on its head. I don't think OpenFlow is going to be like that. But what I do think is going to happen is it's going to change the way we look at networking. And that is, at the moment, we regard every single networking device as an individual. And we have these protocols that attempt to make each router, each switch, so if you think of things like Spanning Tree and OSPF and BGP and MPLS, make it into one coherent system. Except it's not. The protocols we have are incoherent. They OSPF achieves eventual consistency. You know, BGP will eventually converge on the right path to the destination. Spanning Tree uses only half the path and blocks all the other half. You know, things like this. We need to be seeing our networks as one single coherent data plane where data moves from left to right. Our, although IP makes us think of the network in terms of packets, you know, we send a packet and it hops here and it hops there and it hops there and it hops there. Reality is that TCP, which sits over the top of that, is a flow, right? It's a coherent end-to-end expulsion of frames from one device to another, and the whole set needs to get to where it's going and come back again. Our network doesn't actually consist of a series of individual packets that can go anywhere they like and get to the other end. That was the vision 30 years ago because that was all we could manage. Now, 30 years later, we need to grow up and say the real challenge is delivering a stream of data from point A to point B. Or, and the only other or, is a multicast stream, which is point A to multiple destinations who've elected to be there. That's multicast, right? They are the only two use cases that we need to solve. And in terms of addressing that, in the point that this flow goes from point A to point B, OpenFlow offers us a long-term capability. We need to get away from this one packet, one hop. Woohoo, it worked. Goodness me. Surprise! You know, and move into something that says every flow gets permitted. We map it, we know where it's going, we can track its path, and we can analyze it, right? Now, the big part that I think a lot of people missed in the OpenFlow symposium was when Igor Gushinsky was talking about actually taking all the data that's coming into your OpenFlow controller. Now, this requires a very specialized network, but just think of this as a concept. Taking all the data that's coming back from your OpenFlows, like every NetFlow. Imagine taking every NetFlow record from your router and then passing it into Hadoop cluster so you can mine that data for useful information around patterns across your data center network. So instead of just saying, you know, Greg sitting in the corner going, I think this is what's happening, so that's how I'm going to build it, I can actually sit there with an Hadoop cluster and start mining that using a big data set analysis, mining the data flows and going, actually, the real lump of traffic is not the backup going off between 3 and 4 in the morning. The biggest lump of traffic that's actually going on here is the sustained burst mode multicast replication going along inside of my, you know, application Y cluster. And that would be a surprise. And then creating a set of policies and rules as an extension of that big data analysis and saying, this is what I want. Now, keep in mind, before those OpenFlow entries go down into the switches, they also go through a big data set analysis to say whether they're legitimate. Do they comply? Do they cause a barf up? That requires some sort of AI, you know, artificial intelligent type heuristics of the map. So we have a map of the network. We have a map of all the paths. We can then say, what happens if this fails? What happens if this fails? And out, and the AI, the heuristics engine can say, right, we need to have not just a flow that says yes this way, we need to have another flow that says if this rule fails then do this, and if that rule fails then do this, and map out all the alternate possibilities of what needs to be there so that nothing fails.
You're not just drinking the Kool-Aid, man. I think you're making the Kool-Aid. Wow.
No, he's thinking about Skynet.
Okay, now, listen to a lot of all that analysis that you were saying, the visionary stuff, how cool is this going to be, and the ability to, I really was latched on to that last section you were talking there, where you're talking about, let's mine all of this data, and using AI, we can create flows that are customized and policy compliant and so on. Okay, now I can play devil's advocate here and argue that maybe 80% of what we need is already baked into a lot of protocols that we run today. They are defined by an RFC, they are well understood, and they do the vast majority of what we need. So for example here, OSPF is very well understood. It's a mature routing protocol, and we know how it's going to forward. It takes into consideration important things like links going down, routers going away, differences in bandwidth, differences in or changes in the network topology, and automatically adjust for them. Now, if you take that away and you translate it into artificial intelligence and magical software that runs on top of this controller and then programs the network for us, we go from well-known, RFC-driven, mature, does the vast majority of what we need into Brave New World, Skynet, and so on. And I have mixed feelings. It's awesome, and I'm really concerned about that all at the same time, because one of the things that OpenFlow is supposed to get us away from is vendor lock-in. We're supposed to be able to buy our commoditized switches from this person, our controller from this other person, and whatever application that we want,
dream.
Because it's all standardized. What you're talking about is the opposite.
We haven't had that. Oh, come on. Look, in 2001, everybody walked away. Cisco became dominant in the market because their routing implementation worked, and no one else's did a very good job of it. Not that they didn't work, but Cisco's routing implementations were so much better. So their BGP implementation was better than BayRS. Their BGP implement, you know, their OSPF implementation worked where Proteon or Four Systems or Wellfleet couldn't, you know, or Cabletron couldn't do it. And we all converged on Cisco right the way up until 2 or 3 years ago when the markets, you know, when these products finally matured and everybody else finally had stable code. You know, it is going to be vendor specific for the next 5 years at least. If you are going to commit down to OpenFlow as a technology, that's where you're going to go. And that there isn't going to be vendor interoperability because this is early stage technology.
Well, I think the OpenFlow Networking Foundation would take issue with that. I mean, isn't that at the root of what they're going for here? Yeah.
No, of course they would, because as you said, what they want is cheap switches that they can control with their own controller. And it might work for Google, it might work for Yahoo, it might work for like five others. For everyone else, it will be just like Greg said. If you want your things to work and you're not developing your own controller and doing your own QA testing, you will buy things from one vendor.
Just like you do today. Right? Very few data centers today have Cisco, Juniper, Arista all in one data center, all connected together.
Derek, when you were talking to Big Switch and you saw their demo, did you walk away with the impression of, I have to buy a Big Switch integrated solution for this all to work, or did they give you a vibe of interoperability?
It was a vibe of interoperability. That is one of the messages that that came out of the hype curve was, you know, commoditized, interoperable, standardized, you know, switches. You could have, you know, NEC switches on this side and some other switches on that side, or a different vendor for, you're building, you know, top of rack aggregation core or whatever, and you buy different vendors at each layer and it was going to work. But, you know, at the same time, they were pretty realistic. And this is one of the things I really liked about that visit. They went into some detail about, you know, there's vendor specific TLVs, there's hardware differentiation, and it's still going to have to be managed too. So, when you look at, just one of the funniest things I thought when I was sitting at the OpenFlow symposium, it was when they said, on the roadmap we have version 1.2, version 1.3, version 1.4, and we're talking about version 2.0, and there's disagreement about this, that, and the other thing. And I remembered that, I downloaded the reference implementation from Stanford's website, and they distribute Nasira's extensions with it. And, you know, in my mind, things tend towards chaos, not towards order. And things start off simple and they become complicated. And I think we're already seeing that OpenFlow is going to, the ecosystem around OpenFlow is going to evolve where there's going to be interoperability questions. And as a network engineer, you're going to have to understand what version of OpenFlow this node supports, and does it support these extensions, and does it have its own extensions? Does my controller support those extensions, et cetera?
Welcome to Fiber Channel.
Right. And Fiber Channel,
a protocol that's so reliably interoperable that every vendor tests each other's products to guarantee that they actually work?
Exactly.
So, and you know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I just think that's natural. That's how things evolve. I still think that there's potential for some pretty mind-bending things to be implemented on top of OpenFlow.
This comes up with another question that I believe was raised in the symposium, or at least after the symposium, certainly a conversation I was a part of. And that question is the ONF, they are not a standards body exactly, although they are producing a specification for OpenFlow and the succeeding specifications that are on the roadmap. Are they the ones that should be putting a sticker on the box that says this is OpenFlow compliant, or this is OpenFlow 1.0 compliant, 1.1? Well, I guess there's nothing that's out there that's really 1.1. Or should this really be sent off to a different body of people to be helping to write the OpenFlow spec, to be proving that devices are truly interoperable because they're specifications compliant? And the argument I've heard here is that the ONF is not the right group because they've got folks in it with a very specific interest, and so they may not have the networking industry's best interests or widest interests in mind, because they really have sort of a unique viewpoint about this thing.
Ethan, just straight from their website, can anyone use the OpenFlow switching trademark? No. ONF will maintain and enforce the OpenFlow switching trademark. So they own it. They own OpenFlow switching.
So does OpenFlow stay with the ONF long term then, or should the industry have a movement to try to get it away from them? Or does it not matter because we're already past that part maybe?
I would argue that maybe it's good that they did this in their infancy and they have a lot of people focusing on the different issues. Smart people. I really like talking to Guido and Dave Ward at lunch that day, because they're incredibly smart people, and I think they do understand what they don't know and that they have to address these issues. So getting that concentration of people with that much interest, to sort of get this thing off the ground isn't necessarily a bad idea. But in the long run, I think I would like to see them, even potentially dump it off onto the IETF or something of that nature.
Well, yet again, reading frequently asked questions from the Open Networking Foundation, the question is, who can build products that conform to the OpenFlow specs? And it's a long answer. The last statement is, non-members may choose to build products that implement the OpenFlow specs. However, ONF does not require members to grant them a license to do so.
I don't like that. See, what that tells me is that they're protecting right out of the bat, it's not a standard. Like, there's going to be patented things around that standard.
Let me be cynical. I firmly believe that if given a chance, Cisco et al. Would stomp OpenFlow into the ground like a piece of sausage meat, and be done with it, because it disturbs the networking marketplace and it stops them from spewing out even more gobs of cash that they can steal from customers, basically. And the OpenFlow Foundation has been very clever to put vendors to one side and make it customer-led. Now, you can argue that the customers who are leading the OpenFlow Foundation are probably equally as bad as the vendors in the terms of its Verizon, Facebook, Google, Yahoo, not exactly representative of the enterprise marketplace that we probably care about, and who, by the way, probably make up 80% of the networking industry, in terms of, our ability to buy as a group, but not organized enough to be a single point of focus. So I believe they've probably taken this, and I've got no evidence for this except my own guessing, is they're doing this to particularly lock the vendors out so they can't squash the standard under some sort of IEEE, type process where they vote into, run it into a quagmire of bureaucracy while they argue over the color of the ions that go to up and, or something, or argue over slashes in an XML statement, and until people forget about it and go, well, we'll just stick with what we've got.
All of which leads to the point that OpenFlow is not open, not really.
It's an open standard, just like OSPF is open, and BGP and IEEE. Who owns the IEEE standards?
Right? Oh, no, Greg. Anyone can go and implement BGP.
Yes, and anybody can go and implement OpenFlow, and anybody can go and implement Ethernet, but who owns the IP for all of those things? The IEEE owns the Ethernet IP, not us.
That's true.
Right? So why get wound up about who owns the IP? You already suck it into that today.
No, the question is, can I go and implement it, or do I have to get licenses from other people to be able to implement it? And today you can go and implement OSPF, you can go and implement BGP, and you don't have to even consider whether there are licensing issues.
There are standards in the IETF, though, like GDOI, Cisco GET, where it doesn't really interoperate. Interoperation does not work well because when Cisco developed GDOI, they patented parts of it. They called it a standard, but then they patented time-based anti-replay, which means you have to disable anti-replay to get it to interoperate with other vendors, which is problematic. That's one thing I really, and I know, and I think you see this actually, Ivan, you've blogged about this, where there's been this explosion of, we developed this technology and it's standard, and what do we have? We have this alphabet soup of acronyms that just got pumped out, and, just the fact that they came out of it, it was driven through a standards body by a handful of vendors, doesn't mean that it being a standard means anything.
Yeah. I mean, look who's behind the Trill standard or the SPB standard. It's always Huawei, Verizon, Cisco, Juniper. It's not like you and I, Ivan, are actually sitting on the IEEE committees because we can afford to fly over to wherever the meetings are on a regular basis.
No, we have other work to do.
Sure. But the point is that those standards aren't exactly open either. The big companies get a chance to actually influence those and kill them as time, if you read some of the IEEE proceedings around the 802.1 QBG, you'll realize that the vendors actually fought themselves to a standstill to make sure that nobody got an advantage over the other.
Yeah, it's like LDP and TDP, like from, what was that, 12 years ago?
Uh-huh.
Where they just had to change the standard so that Cisco wouldn't have an advantage because they already had tech switching.
Yep, and so on and so on. So, if OpenFlow is not, the real story is exactly like MP3. As long as they give you a commitment not to sue you, then I don't really care. I'm done with Open.
Okay.
So, Greg, you said that earlier, we should be sort of looking at our infrastructures as just, one big sort of data plane and manage it in that capacity. And one of the things that's I think is interesting about that is I think that's interesting, and there's potential use cases, for a company of my size, and I'm not even I think our company is kind of big. It is a big network, but it's nothing like Yahoo or Google. So still, large companies, they hear those things and there's potential applications and it solves, large-scale management problems. But for companies that aren't our size, I mean, do they really care about that? Just because you can do that, does it mean the problem really couldn't be solved another way? Was it yesterday, Ivan, Brad Handelin posted this design that I kind of laughed out loud when I saw it, and it was, he built a non-blocking data center architecture that used traditional routing protocols and equal cost load balancing to build a non-blocking fabric without wasting bandwidth on links. And I thought it was hilarious when I saw it because it looks like it'll work. Do you agree, Ivan?
Yeah, absolutely. That works.
Now, the difference is that you're losing all that. You have NetFlow and things like that, but you can't really have direct control over individual flows. I don't know if you could really manage all that visually.
Hey, who cares? It works.
It works, right?
It's like internet. It works.
So but for a design like that, though, where somebody, they manage to adapt, existing technologies, switches a reasonable cost into an architecture that seems to address the problem at least for an enterprise. I think that might actually slow the deployment of OpenFlow. And if you've been following like the layer 3 VPN mailing list, they're just now starting to take seriously, the integration of VM with like for instance existing virtual network technologies and how to move VMs from one host to the other and have the network automatically follow it and adapt quickly to that movement. I'm wondering if, in general, if existing technologies are going to evolve and adapt, you know, in a way that might actually overshadow OpenFlow or make people think that maybe, why would I go to this whole new paradigm and this whole new ecosystem when I can keep doing what I'm doing? And, you know, switches have become cheaper, actually. That's one of the things I think is kind of interesting about, you know, we're going to drive the prices down to nothing, is that, you know, when I hear some of the prices and that they're proposing, you know, at least a company of my size, we're already getting pretty sizable discounts, and the prices are coming down for higher speed ports progressively. So there's a part of me that thinks, you know, OpenFlow might get lost in that evolution.
Well, what's the play for a Juniper then? Because another thing that we saw at Network Field Day, Juniper spent a good bit of time talking to us about how anything that talks to Junos under the hood is done with XML. They've written an API that will do the same thing to talk to Junos via XML, but they're exposing OpenFlow commands. So as I understand it, they'll take an OpenFlow command set that hits this API. They'll transform it to XML, send them down to Junos. There you go. We can do OpenFlow stuff.
Well, actually, they use a different API, but yes, more or less along the same lines. Well, you see, the problem they have is that everyone like Igor Reshinsky wants extra functionality, and it doesn't make sense for them to implement that in Junos, because you buy only maybe 10,000 switches or routers, and they give you extra functionality, they have to maintain that forever.
Right. OpenFlow gives you the, I made this point in one of my blog posts about OpenFlow. OpenFlow gives you the ability to effectively write the feature into the switch that the vendor wasn't going to write for you because you don't buy enough stuff from them.
Well, Ethan, it's not just buy enough stuff from them. If they implement that feature, they have to do quality tests on that feature forever. Whatever else they change, they have to test this feature for the next X years. That's why things like Cisco IOS are so bloated, because they contain hundreds of features that they had to implement for a specific customer that was big enough, and now that's hurting them. You know, they can't implement a feature for you and tell you this will only run in 15.03m, and you can't upgrade your software. Of course you want to upgrade, and you want your feature to be in the next software release, and they have to test that.
And how many customers actually use the features that they ask for even when they're delivered?
Well, that's a different story, but there's always one customer asking for a specific feature.
That's right. And there's always one customer who's willing to put a multi-million dollar tender on the line and say, once you give us that feature, we'll give you the business.
Even if you get that $1 million or $10 million.
Yeah, or 50 or 100, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, you're stuck with that feature forever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we've come to any conclusions here now. This is one of those conversations that's like, we started out with, OpenFlow was so cool. It was one of the most awesome things I've ever seen. Now we're at the point of,
yeah,
I'm bitter, and I don't know how this is going to work out, and I don't really know what's going to happen, and I'm not sure I really want to go down this road.
So, for my money, OpenFlow is about where networking was in 1996.
Yes.
Right? And we're talking about it because we will all still be in the industry, potentially, not retired, for at least another 20 years. So in 5 years' time, we should start to see OpenFlow crystallizing into something valuable. We should start to see products coming onto the market early next year in serious capabilities. And that's where people who are architects and designers should start strategizing around it. And in terms of people who have to make career choices about what their future careers look like, you might want to start looking at it in the middle of next year and seeing what OpenFlow is going to look like and whether you should be adding that or considering that as, I say, a five-year plan.
The way I started thinking about it is OpenFlow is today where IP was in 1990. Everyone was running SNA and DECnet, and everyone was happy with that. And everyone was looking at IP and saying, why should I care about that?
I think there's an open question of how OpenFlow is going to develop, whether it is going to end up becoming a niche problem or a niche solution that solves specific problems, or whether it's going to be a brand new networking paradigm where we're building data centers from the ground up based on OpenFlow to make our forwarding decisions.
No.
In the meantime, I'm stuck with a pseudo MPLS in the data center and virtual firewalls or trying to implement VMware and some of the software-based firewalls and software-based load balancers and poor separation and lack of security compliance because I can't separate, and using the same old tools that we've had for a long time. And, you know, the question as to whether VMware is ever going to develop some serious networking capabilities, to my mind, remains open. We haven't seen any intelligence in their networking implementations. Up until now, VMware has kind of handed it over to Cisco to give them some sort of capabilities via the Nexus 1000V. But that's not good enough. Customers aren't all buying Nexus 1000V. And we need more, we need better virtual switches than we're getting today. We need better virtual networking capabilities than we've got in the server and in our data centers. So we've got performance almost licked, 10 gig, high-speed silicon, data center fabrics, multipathing. We've even got, you know, MLAG and multi-chassis capabilities that are sort of causing more problems than they solve, but where do we go after that? Where's the control? Where's the separation? Where's the configuration management? Where's the systems management? Where's the network monitoring like vCenter in VMware that actually tells us what all our devices are as a single unit?
Well, you see, that's the point I was making on the last podcast, so let me repeat that. We need to separate those two. We don't want to know about virtual networking in the data center core. Just run IP there using designs like Brad did yesterday. So fat trees, reasonably sized switches, reasonably expensive switches. And because it's IP and because nothing moves, the whole thing is totally stable. And then on top of that, you add the virtual networking. And that thing can move as much as it wants, but the infrastructure stays stable.
So on top of that, where though? I guess that when you say that, on top of when you add virtualization on top of that, where
on top
are you
of IP
that? In the core at the edge?
Well, you see what Cisco and VMware are doing with VXLAN, and what OpenVSwitch is doing with GRE tunnels. In both cases, the core is stable; it's IP forwarding, and then they implement whatever virtual networking is on top of stable IP core.
So at the edge is where that...
Exactly, yeah. So the edges can fluctuate if they want. The core is totally separate and stable.
Well, Derek, did you have any other closing thoughts you want to share about where you think OpenFlow is going to take us?
Sure. Well, you were right. We kind of went down this path of like, it was bleak, right, with respect to OpenFlow. But I actually... You know, I got to reiterate. Actually, I wouldn't be blogging about it if I wasn't kind of excited about it. And I think that we're going to have the potential to do some pretty amazing things. And you know, one of the things if you get out there and you actually talk to some of the people at Big Switch and the other places, one of the things that really strikes me is ability, like I said, to kind of merge multi-tenant and virtual topology in one, and to sort of centrally manage that. And I kind of envision that I'd be able to build this high-level application that is sort of an abstraction of a web tier, let's say. Let's say that's one environment is this web tier. And instead of me managing the network inside of that web tier, it's managed by the application. And I can turn that over to our web tier folks who manage the servers, and you know they want the load balancers built this way and so on. And if they want to add a segment in a server cluster behind a load balancer, they can do that visually, or you know, and that gets filtered down through policies, and then I don't have to build VLANs and five different switches, or you know, go into QIP or InfoBlocks and pull subnets and reserve them. All of that can sort of happen in an automated fashion, and then I'm not really taking care of the tenant's network for them. They can take care of it through those applications, and that part is really where I'm kind of excited about that. You know, we can get our network guys sort of away from having to do 10 million load balancer requests. You know, if we have a heavy web presence, so we got to pull new certs for this, or you know, move a bunch of servers over here in the load balancer, et cetera. All of that can be sort of automated, and then they can go back to being network engineers. And that kind of thing, that's where I'm kind of excited for OpenFlow, is having those high-level applications that can do that.
It's all about the software-defined networking layer, or the controller, and the functions you can put in the controller. And they solve more than one challenge, not just the forwarding plane, but also things like configuration management, data analysis, path analysis, systems control, feedback on how the network is performing, configuring QoS, you know, all these things that we have in disparate systems. Like we use 8 to 10 pieces of software to monitor our network, to manage our network, and to operate our network. Isn't it time we got away from telnetting into each switch in our network to configure it? Isn't it time we just had a central thing and said, change this, and off it goes and does that?
Yes, it is time. I would say that.
Yes, it
someone
is
that
time.
Has to do exactly that. Yeah. Why don't we wrap it up here? Ivan, would you share with us what you'll be working on this week and remind folks how they can follow you and where you blog and so on?
Oh, thank you. So I'm really looking forward to tomorrow morning because supposedly we are getting access to JunoSphere. So it will be my first encounter with Junos. And I've been doing some very crazy stuff during this weekend, like converting XML configs to the curly braces configs and trying to port iOS configuration into Junos configuration automatically. So instead of, you know, just doing cut and paste and fixing things the easy way, I spent 2 days programming things. And if people are interested about that, I'll blog about it on my blog, which is blog.ioshints.info. And I'll tweet about my experience, and I'm at iOS Hints.
Derek, thank you for joining us on the podcast today, your first and definitely not your last appearance on the show, I think. And where can how can folks follow you, and where do you blog again?
I blog on Packet Pushers and under the name CloudToad, and you can follow me on Twitter at CloudToad. And I'll also be, my next few blog posts will be about some scripts I've written in Xsalt for Junos.
Awesome. And of course, Greg is still recovering from jet lag in London, working in a Cisco lab. And what else you got going on, Greg, and how can people keep up with you?
Well, people can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com or on the Twitter as at etherealmind. I will probably be a little bit silent for the next few weeks as I'm heavily into writing for other people and my main day job. So if I'm not around, I'm not dead. I'm just working.
And I'm Ethan Banks. You can follow me on Twitter at ecbanks, and I also blog on packetpushers.net. I got a whole bunch of things in the works that I never seem to quite get down and get out there, but I've got a few projects behind me at work. I finished my last firewall cutover is done. I just finished off a site this weekend. I drove all the way up to New Brunswick, Canada last week, where I finished off a bit of a data center redesign up there, which actually sounds more impressive than it really was. It was just a few switches in an internet router that I was messing with to make it more resilient and a more appropriate disaster recovery site for the company that gets most of my attention these days. Thanks for listening to the show this week. You can follow the Packet Pushers on Twitter at Packet Pushers. Visit packetpushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers community. Subscribe to our RSS feeds and donate to the show if you'd like to help us pay the bills. Email your comments or questions about anything networking to packetpushers@gmail.com. The Packet Pushers podcast is a Unicorn Tears production. No unicorns were harmed in the making of this fine audio podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our sponsors. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.
Nice.
This edition of the Packet Pushers podcast is brought to you by Infinetta Systems, a leading innovator and provider of hyperscale WAN optimization solutions. Infinetta's WAN optimization product, the Data Mobility Switch, allows enterprises to expand and fill large WAN links. Companies benefit from increased WAN utilization, improved application performance, and cost savings from fewer bandwidth upgrades. Infinetta helps you move more data more quickly using less bandwidth. Get more information at www.infinetta.com.